Okay, I think I'm going to make a start. So I'm here, Binah, with Rona, and a bunch of people here on Zoom. So make a start. This week's Parshas, Parshas Mishpatim, which is the Parsha which comes right after the giving of the Torah. All the laws, Mishpatim has many, many laws. All the laws, according to Rashi, were then given to Moshe Rabbeinu after the giving of the Torah on the mountain when he went up for 40 days. These were laws which were given to teach the Jewish people. I'll just go through the, just so you get a sense of the kind of laws, right? In fact, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to, first of all, screen share here. Give me 1 second. Yeah, here we are. Okay, so if we look at number one. It says, Ve'ele ha-mishpatim, these are the laws, asher tosim lifneim, which you shall place before them. Hashem is saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, it's now finished Har-Sinai, Matan Torah, now these are the laws which you have to place before the Jewish people. Lots of different kinds of laws. So you have laws, for example, of how to treat slaves. We have the laws, civil laws of damages, when someone injures someone else, what the damages are that they have to pay. The laws of shomrim, which is custodians, different type of custodians. If I look after someone's article, if I look after someone's car, someone's bicycle, someone's computer, what are my obligations, what happens if it gets stolen, all these kinds of things. The laws of loans, famous pasuk in this week's parsha. The laws of ashava saveda, returning lost articles. Court conduct, we have the idea of how a Beis Din has to work. You have to go according to majority view. I was just explaining to someone yesterday that the court system in halacha is quite different in a way from a normal secular system. For example, one thing we find in terms of Beis Din, litigation that takes place in the Beis Din or any type of court case, we don't have in Jewish law, we don't have a concept of a jury. There's no jury. The judges have to be learned and well immersed and expert on the subject. However, we don't leave it to one judge either. There has to be a minimum of 3 judges. So in normal monetary financial cases, it's a case of having 3 judges. In ancient times, there were capital punishment cases or corporate punishment cases. There were 23 judges and so on. And the ultimate court, the court of the Supreme Court, the Sanhedrin, was 71 judges, right? That's also in this week's parasha a little bit. And of course, we have the meat and milk, which we'll see in a second. And we also have at the end of the parasha out of order, chronologically, goes back to before the giving of the Torah. Meaning the preparations to the event of Har Sinai. All right, that's the end of the parasha. I just want to, what I said now is only just some of the mitzvahs, right? There are many, many more mitzvahs in this parasha. In fact, there are 23 positive commandments in the parasha and 30 negative commandments, right? I just want to mention before we go further, this parasha also is a very special parasha, this Shabbos, I mean, because actually we don't only read the parasha, we read also the part to do with Rosh Chodesh, because it's Rosh Chodesh, the Shabbos. And also we read Shkolim. So we begin this week with the first of the 4 special editions that we do around this time of the year. This week being the mitzvah of Chatzi Shekel, or half a shekel, which we read in this Shabbos, because what happens is, in ancient times, there was a mitzvah of everyone to give a yearly tax of a half a shekel, which was used to bring, to purchase animals for the korbanot, for the sacrifices. And that was it all had to be in by the beginning of Nisan. So during the month of Adar, in fact Rosh Chodesh Adar, the court, the Sanhedrin, would send out messengers to remind everyone that it's time now to give the half a shekel. So we read it this time of the year. We always read it either on the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh, or if Shabbos is Rosh Chodesh like this year, we read it on Rosh Chodesh Adar. Interesting just to point out, if you're going to make it to shul or not, whatever, but this Shabbos in shul, there are 3, we take out 3 Torahs. It's not a common occurrence. We take out 3 Torahs because One for the parsha, one for a shchodesh, and one for shkalim. But we do it a bit differently. Normally when we take out the one for the parsha, we always read seven aliyot. We call up seven people. This week what we do, because we have three Sefer Torahs, in the first Sefer Torah we read Parshas Mishpatim, but we combine the sixth and the seventh aliyah. So we only read six call-ups in the first Sefer Torah. Then the second for a shchodesh, we do the seventh. And then in the third Sefer Torah, we do the maftir, which is shkalim, and the haftarah is to do with the shkalim. I've mentioned this many times, but I'll mention it again, because I always remember it at the three Sefer Torahs. My grandmother, Aleha Shalom, blessed memory, had a minag, where from the town she came from, that when there was a Shabbos, you take out two Sefer Torahs, you make two kugels. But if you Shabbos, you take out three Sefer Torahs, you take three kugels. So that was the thing, to make out three kugels on the Shabbos because they're three Sefer Torahs. It's not a common occurrence. We do it on Simchas Torah, of course, but during the year, it's not such a common thing. Okay. Now, what I want to do today is I want to highlight one particular mitzvah in this parasha, and then talk about it a bit, and then also talk about a general theme in the parasha, which is relevant to that particular mitzvah as well, as we'll soon see. So I'm going to skip a little bit. If you go to number three, right? If you go to number three, you'll see the following. So we, just going to see something here. Give me 1 second. So number three on the screen. This is the mitzvah which we have, which is the mitzvah of not mixing meat and milk. It comes up three times in the Torah. But one of them, the first time, is this week's parasha. Let's have a look at it. So it says in the parasha, Reishis Bikurei, there's two mitzvahs in the same pasuk, which we won't go into today, but Reishis Bikurei Ad Mascha Tavi Beis Hashem Aleikecha. The first fruits, this is Bikurim, the first fruits you should bring to the house of Hashem, your God, part one. And then it says, Loisavashel Gedi Bachalev Imoy. Do not cook a goat in its mother's milk. This is the prohibition against eating meat and milk. Now, this comes up three times in the Torah, and each time it says exactly the same word. You shouldn't cook a goat in its mother's milk. So the Torah Shabbat Peh, the oral Torah, the Talmud explains to us, why is it three times? There's three prohibitions around meat and milk. One is you're not supposed to cook meat and milk, which means even if you're not planning to eat it, you shouldn't cook meat and milk at all. Right? You shouldn't cook meat and milk. The second one is to tell you shouldn't eat it. There's a hand up here, right? And the third one is you shouldn't even have benefit from it, right? So that's the three times it says the prohibition of meat and milk. So it's interesting because a lot of things that are prohibited to eat, you can still have benefit from it. You can sell it. You can give it as a present. Meat and milk, we know, is an exception. You cannot do that. By the way, the practical relevance of that today is if you buy dog food, pet food, it doesn't have to be kosher, it doesn't need a hechsher. The only thing is you have to make sure it doesn't contain meat and milk together. Because it's interesting, because you can't have benefit from it. So there's nothing wrong in feeding your dog treif meat. That's not a problem, because treif meat we're not allowed to eat, but you're allowed to have benefit from it. So you're feeding it to your dog, that's not a problem, right? But you couldn't feed them. I mean, I don't know if such a thing exists, but I'm just saying you couldn't feed them pet food if it contains meat and milk together, because you're not allowed to even have benefit from meat and milk. That's the added prohibition, right? Now, interesting, all three times, I'll just talk just a little bit about explaining, I think I went into it a bit. All three times it says it in the Torah, it uses the expression, although one refers to cooking, one refers to eating, one refers to not having benefit, it always uses the term lo savash, you shouldn't cook, right? Because the reason for that is because the biblical prohibition of meat and milk, now I'll emphasize the biblical prohibition because there's plenty of rabbinic prohibitions about it, so don't get any ideas, but the biblical prohibition is only if it's cooked together. So interestingly enough, biblically, obviously it's not permissible, but biblically it would be okay to have a salami and cheese sandwich because they're not cooked together, right? So the Isur d'oraisa is only when they cook together. However, of course, the Chachamim, the rabbis, prohibited us to have any form of meat and milk, not even to eat one after another. We have to wait in between and so on, because obviously as a prevention, as a siyag, as a fence, but the Torah uses the term tevashel, right? Now, the relevance of, I'll just point out an interesting thing. One of the prohibitions is you're not allowed to even cook meat and milk, even if you're not going to eat it, right? The practical relevance at home, there is a practical relevance for this. Because cooking doesn't only mean cooking when it's boiling. Cooking means when it's two hot things come into contact with each other, right? So if you, for example, just finished Shabbos and there's a hot cholent on the stove and it's meat and you throw it into the garbage can, and then you have a malava malka with a bit of cheese, you shouldn't throw the cheese on top of that milk, on top of that meat, if it's hot. You can throw meat and milk in the same garbage can, but you don't have to have two, you don't have to have a fleshy kabuchi garbage can. But if you've got hot meat, or hot milk for that matter, then you make sure you shouldn't put the opposite in the garbage can at the same time. Because that's, you're actually cooking it then, that's a problem. Okay. Now, that's just interesting details. Now, we know that the mitzvah of, again, I'm just going to talk about one mitzvah in the parasha and then talk about a general theme in the parasha, but we'll see the connection when I get there. So, the mitzvah of meat and milk, according to most Rishonim, is one of the mitzvahs called chukim. It has no reason, right? There's interesting language from the Sefer HaChinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch, who brings from different sources some explanations, some insights into not having meat and milk together. At the end, he says, V'chol zeh einenu shoyveli. That's actually an expression from the Megillah Esther, which Haman said. Haman said all his wealth is worth nothing to him because Mordechai won't bow down to him. So the Sefer HaChinuch borrows the same expression. He says, all these reasons are very nice, but v'chol zeh einenu shoyveli, it's all worth nothing to me because at the end of the day, it's a chayk, right? Why can't you eat meat and milk? What's the real reason? We don't know. There are insights, there are concepts. I'm going to go into one of them now, but there are ideas behind it, but nevertheless, the real reason is a chayk. And therefore, because it's a chayk, we keep it because Hashem said so, as we do all the chukim, which are mitzvahs, which we don't have the reason for, which are designed to teach us the art of surrendering and being obedient. That's what it is, right? Okay. Now, having said that, after that introduction, we know that many mekubalim and many mystics do bring explanations, and the Rambam himself actually says an interesting thing. The Rambam says, I'll just quote it for you, so you don't have it in front of you, but he says that even though the chukim of the Torah, says the Rambam, even though these mitzvahs called chukim, gezeiroishem, they are decrees, right? As we explained. However, it's always good to think about them, always good to give them reasons if they make sense, because we find that Shlomo HaMelech did that. How do we know that Shlomo HaMelech did that? Shlomo HaMelech complained that he understood all the chukim except for the paradoma, except for the red heifer. So we see, obviously, he was exploring the reasons, right? Now, were they the ultimate reasons? Maybe not, but it's good to give reasons. Because, he says, the reason not just to be academic and to sort of see if we can be clever and find reasons. The reason is because when we can apply the reasons and then we can use the spiritual significance behind the mitzvahs to improve our personality. That's what he says, to prove who we are. Right? Because he says, many of them, we know that Rav Dinei Torah, says the Rambam. Most of the halachas of the Torah, they're not just halachas we have to keep, which we do. But he says they're also there to use his lashon, the saken hadeos, to fix our perspectives, ula yasher kol amaisim, and to straighten out our behavior. Right, that's the lashon of the Rambam. So that's why it's good. And therefore, with that introduction, although basar b'chol, meat and milk, ultimately is a chayk, but we do find many, many things. Now, one of them is a very famous one. I'm going to touch on it for a few minutes. He says, Rabbeinu Bechai brings, other people bring it, that the early mekubalim talk about this. The fact that the basar b'chol of meat and milk is an inappropriate mixture of chesed and gevura. Now, what does that mean? We know that meat, being red, meat symbolizes the concept of gevura, right? Milk, which is white and pure and baby-like, represents the concept of chesed, right? And it's got to do with the colors, because you know that red is a color of gevura. We know, for example, that also has to do with the Mars, right? We know that every hour has to do with another planet. And Mazal Maidim is the planet of Mars, which is red. It's not a good planet. It's always gevura, harshness, and it's a complicated planet. It can be transformed. It says in the Gemara that someone is born in the hour dominated by the planet of Mars. He could have murderous tendencies, so that's a problem. So be a cruel person. So he has to channel that. He's become a shoychet or a moel or a surgeon or a bloodletter, it says the word, right? Something like that. So channel it into something positive. But it's a gevura thing. Now, interestingly enough, although we often talk about the greatness of harmonizing a chesed and gevura together, right? We'll see later why it's different here over here. It's mixing blurring the lines. That's why also the main prohibition is cooking it together. Because when you cook two things together, you can't really tell the difference between the two. They become one mush, one entity. So the mixing of meat and milk together is the concept of chesed and gevura, blending it with each other to the point you can't tell one from another, and that's a problem, right? Now, I might have explained this before around Shavuos time, but I just want to show you a beautiful thing from the, I think it's the Ben Ishchai. Let me just, The Ben Ishchai brings this in the name of a Mekubal, he says. An amazing thing. And I'll just explain it because it's a beautiful idea. He says, that's also why we find, right, that when you eat milk, you don't really have to wait long before you eat meat. Right? Api Allah, actually, you can eat meat right away as long as you, it's a different meal and you wash your mouth. Okay, minhag is to wait half an hour, some people, I'll pick a bowl, wait an hour, whatever the case is. If you eat meat, you have to wait a long time before you can eat milk. That's how it works. Why is that? Now, obviously, halachically, the reason is very simple, because meat digests a lot slower, meat gets stuck in the teeth, all sorts of things the Shulchan Aruch says. That's why after meat, you have to wait longer than you have to wait after milk. However, mystically, to do with the fact that meat is gevura and milk is chesed, they explain like this. But I have to give a bit of introduction. In the Gemara, there's a machloikas, there's a dispute between Rav and Shmuel about what happens if you pour something into something else. Now this could be with kosher and treif, or it could be with meat and milk. So let's say by mistake you poured some meat into milk, a meat thing into a milk thing, or you poured a milk thing into a meat thing. And one is cold and one is hot, right? Now we know in halacha, transfer of taste happens through heat. Right? So let's say a piece of meat fell into some milk. Something fell into a milk dish. Right? And only one of them was hot, one of them was cold. So what's the halacha? In other words, what is stronger? The one on top or the one on the bottom? You follow? So let's say, for example, cold meat falls into hot milk. Right? Now, if the one on the bottom is the stronger, then the taste of milk is going to go straight into the meat, throughout the meat, and the whole meat will be treif. If the one on top is stronger, right, then the cold meat will overpower, will cool down the milk, and will say that only you just have to peel off the meat, or it won't go through the whole meat, right? So it's called, in Gemara, it's called Ilo'o Gavar or Tato'o Gavar. Is the top one stronger, or is the bottom one stronger? Right, that's the machloekes between Rav and Shmuel. We paskin like Shmuel, and we say that tator gover, that the bottom one is stronger. Okay, so therefore, piece of meat goes into milk. Let's say the meat was hot and the milk was cold. The meat won't be treif completely. It'll be, you always have to ask a Rav or Shalak, there's going to be other details, but generally speaking, that's the concept that we just have to peel off the meat, whatever the case is, but we say the bottom one is stronger. See, the bottom one is stronger is like this. We always want chesed to be stronger than gevura, correct? So it says, if you eat milk first, and then you eat meat, what's on the bottom? The one that went in first, right? So if a person eats milk and then meat, so milk is on the bottom. So therefore, we don't have to wait so much between the meat and the milk, between the milk and the meat. Because the milk's on the bottom, it's chesed. So what are you going to do? You're going to put in the meat, so the chesed will overpower the gevura. That's okay. However, if you eat meat first, now you've got gevura on the bottom, which is harshness, right? And you put in milk right away, then the gevura will overpower the chesed. That's not a good thing. So therefore, you have to wait much longer until it's fully digested. That's an interesting thing. And I think I have said this before, but I'll just say it again because it's so beautiful. The Sar Sholem of Belz, one of the Belz Rebbe, is a great tzaddik. He used this principle to explain a fascinating gemara, which got to do with last week's parasha, this week's parasha. And that's a famous Gemara, which is actually not, it's a Medrash, because it's written in the Gemara also, but a bit of a different version. But the way it's in the Medrash is as follows. That the Medrash says that the Malachim, right, the Malachim came to Hashem and said, don't give the Yidden the Torah. Last week's parasha, Moshe goes up on the mountain, wants to get the Torah, the Malachim stand in the way, and they say, don't give the Torah to the Jewish people, give the Torah to us, right? So famous Medrash says that Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu, turns to the Malachim and says, what do you mean? You want the Torah? You transgressed the Torah. When? When you went to Avraham Avinu, the three Malachim, It says there was a meal. A meal had milk and meat. You ate meat and milk. And the Torah says you're not supposed to do that. Right? So how come? So you can't get the Torah. And that seemed to be an amazing response. And the whole case fell down. And we got the Torah. Which is an extremely strange medrash. First of all, the Torah wasn't given yet. It wasn't halachically problematic. Second of all, actually, it's not true. Because don't forget, Avraham Avinu thought they were people, right? And they were really malachim. So Avraham Avinu obviously wanted to give them kosher. So what did he do? If you look carefully in the psukim, he gave them milk and then meat. So it wasn't a problem. If you eat milk first and then meat, it's not a problem. They didn't eat it together, number one. And number two, they didn't eat meat first, they ate milk first. So what was the issue? What was the prohibition? Right? Says it's how Shalom HaBel's a beautiful thing. No. Again, why are you allowed to eat meat after milk? Because we paskin what's on the bottom is more important, correct? Oh. Says Hashem to the Malachim. Oh, so what's on the bottom is more important, right? But you want to get the Torah, which means you paskin that what's on the top is more important. Malachim are on top, we're in the bottom. What's on the top is overpowering, correct? So according to you, it should be the other way around. You can eat milk right after meat, because the chesed is now on the top. But you can't eat meat right after milk, because the gevurah is on the bottom. The gevurah is on the top of meat, right? According to you. So according to Malachim, it should be the other way around. You went down there, and you ate the meal by Avraham Avinu. What did you do? You ate milk and then meat right away. You can only eat milk and then meat if you paskin that what's on the bottom is more important. Tatogava. Right? And you didn't, and that's what you did. So what did you do by showing you went to Avraham Avinu? You showed that what on the bottom is more important. So who gets the Torah? The bottom. The Yid, not the Malachim. Right? Beautiful idea. The only problem is with this whole thing, I'll just mention this just quickly. It's a big thing, but two things about this. First of all, this is the fact that meat is gevurah and milk is chesed. Is why we find like this. In Yiddishkeit, we know that meat eating has a place in halacha, right? Especially after Noach, it was given permission to eat meat, and meat has a place. Korbanos for meat, we have to shecht meat, we can eat meat. Yontav is supposed to eat meat. Purim, it's preferable to eat meat by the Purim Siddur, right? Shabbos, we eat meat. I mean, meat has a definite place in halacha. Now, we know that when you eat something, anything for that matter, we have this concept, we've talked about this before. When you eat something, we have this concept called birur hanitzotzes. That every food that we eat needs to be refined. It has certain spiritual godly sparks, right? Which are trapped in that particular food. When you make a bracha on it and you eat it for the right reason, you eat it for the right focus, we elevate the food and we release the sparks, and that's called the birur of the nitzutzes. We refine, we select the sparks, and we're elevating the food, and through that we're elevating ourselves as well, right? Yet we find, and that's true with milk, it's true with meat, it's true with any food for that matter, right? Yet we find the interesting thing that it seems a lot harder to eat meat. Meat has so many more complications than milk does. Milk, you take a cup of milk and you eat it. You take a banana and you eat it. Meat has this, all these halachas. You have to shecht it, and the shechita, the laws are unbelievably complex. Then you have to kasher it, and then treber it, a lot of things, right? And even then, although meat has a place in halacha, it's a mitzvah to eat meat in certain cases, and we eat meat generally in our meals and so on and so forth, but there's a fascinating line in the Gemara that says, Amoretz osu lechol basar. Now, Amoretz normally is a term used for ignoramus. What does it mean? It means someone who's not on a high level, someone who's a very low level, you shouldn't eat meat. Why? If it's a mitzvah to eat meat, why should it eat meat? What the Gemara is saying is like this. Because whenever we eat something, there's an effort that we have to put in to eat it for the right reason, and to eat it properly, and through that to make the birur hanitzitzis, to refine the food, right? But meat is a lot harder to refine. Why? Because it comes from the side of gevurah. Something that comes from the side of chesed, even though it's food and it's now physical, it's been manifested in the physical form, it's still easier to refine because it comes from the side of chesed. Chesed is revelation, chesed is flexibility, just chesed is easier to deal with, right? When it comes to meat, however, although it's a big mitzvah to refine meat, but it's gevurah. Gevurah is a hard thing to interact with, and therefore it's so much more complicated. And therefore, it's got to be shechted properly, it's got to be kasher properly, and it needs a bigger focus. And in fact, we are taught that the indulgence in meat is worse Overindulgence in meat is worse than indulgence in other things, because it's more gvuradik. So if you indulge in something parav or milchik, okay, so you're not supposed to do that, but you don't get so drawn down because it's not so good. It's chesed at the end of the day. If you overindulge in meat, that becomes a problem because it's gvura, right? That fits into this whole concept of gvura being meat, which actually goes to an interesting vort of the Chassam Sofer explained a bit by the Yismach Moshe. And that is, why taka is there a problem, therefore, to eat meat and milk together? Shouldn't it be a good thing? In other words, we always talk about sweetening the gevura, transforming the gevura, right? So according to this whole thing of milk being chesed and meat being gevura, it should be a good thing to eat chesed and gevura together. Maybe the chesed can work with the gevura and sweeten it, right? So why is such a bad thing? So the Chassam Sofer says a very interesting thing. I don't fully comprehend this myself, but it's a nice idea. I'll just mention it briefly before we go into the general thing. And that is, he says like this. We know that the world was created, again, going to this concept that we eat in order to elevate. And meat is harder to elevate, right? When the world was created, we know that actually originally mankind was not permitted to eat meat, right? Adam and Chava were created not to eat meat. So how was the elevation of the food going to take place? What was the original plan, right? The original plan was that they would eat milk. Milk was always going to be permitted to eat. And milk comes from the animal, right? And milk was going to be the easy and clear pathway into elevating the milk and what the milk comes from, which is the animal. So originally the elevation of meat, the elevation of animals was going to be through eating milk. That's what the Chassam Sofer says, right? What happened? Adam and Chava sinned. And when they sinned, they sent into motion a series of descents, right? We know there were seven Averis, which caused the Shekhinah to depart from this world, and so on and so forth, right? And because that happened, it no longer became possible or easy to refine the animal just by eating the milk. The animal now needed its own elevation, right? Which is why Noach was then given permission, not just permission, it was permission, but then it became even a mitzvah in certain circumstances to eat meat, because the animals need to be elevated, and post the sin of Adam and Chava, it can only be elevated through eating the meat itself in a complicated process, in a difficult way, but not by eating the milk. Therefore, says the Yismach Moshe, when we eat meat and milk together, all it does is it's ma'oirer, it reawakens the original sin. It's not a good thing. It reawakens din. It makes a kitrug. It brings a prosecution against humankind. Because what you're doing is you're saying, it's emphasizing, when you eat meat separately, okay, so we work with it and we try, etc., etc. When you eat meat and milk together, what you're saying is, you're emphasizing that the milk itself is not enough. It's with emphasis, because now the milk is with the meat. And what it does is just triggers, so to speak, the original sin, the original chet ve'etz hadas, and that's why in that case the ches and the gevura is not a good combination. Whereas in our personality, it is a good thing. When we have to do gevura, we use chesed, we harness the chesed together with the gevura. We try to do that for the right reasons, but in case of meat and milk, we don't do that because it reawakens the original sin and it becomes a problem. So that's just some of the insights into basa b'cholav, but remembering that meat and milk at the end of the day is one of the chukim, it's not one of the mishpatim. It's one of the mitzvahs without reason, it's not one of the mitzvahs with a reason. Okay, now, with that, let's go to a general concept. One second here. What I'm going to share with you is quite a deep idea. We've shared part of this idea before, but I'm going to take it to a deeper level today, and it comes from a sicha, comes from an essay of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, a combination of what he said in 1965 and 1976. So it's a very strange parsha, this parsha, in a way. What happens? So we have the name of the parsha, right? The name of the parsha is Mishpatim. Now, we have a principle, we've said this before. When you have a name of a parsha, a name of anything for that matter, the name sort of represents everything that's in that, that's covered by that name, right? So when you have a name of Mishpatim, that obviously means that Mishpatim is connected with the entire parsha. Which of course raises already the problem, because yes, most of the parsha is Mishpatim, right? But then one of the last mitzvahs in the parasha is mina milk, which is not a mishpat. It's a chayk. It's one of the chukim, right? Number one. Number two, we have this very strange phenomenon in the parasha, where last week we had matan Torah, right? Last week we had matan Torah. Then we break for mishpatim, the mitzvahs which were given after matan Torah, and then for some reason the Torah goes back to the preparation for matan Torah. It goes back. We half the story of matan Torah we didn't get last week. We get it this week. Now, it is true that the Chazal tell us ein mukta meucher b'Torah. There's no chronological order to the Torah, right? True, and therefore the Torah is not bound by putting things in historical order. But it doesn't dafka mix it up. I mean, there's a reason when it has that, right? Now, the Torah is not a history book, but it doesn't dafka do things out of order. So when you have the story split like that, it's obviously got to be a reason. Now, interesting enough, what part of the story do we have in Matan Torah? Part of it is what took place according to Tosfos on the 5th of Sivan, which was when the Yidden said Nasa v'Nishba. Have a look in the thing. Here we are. Number four. Right? It says, one of the things it says in the story, it says, Vayikach Sefer Abris, Moshe Rabbeinu took the Book of Covenant. These were the pact that they made between Hashem and the Yidden. Vayikra Ba'oz Ne'am, and he read it in the ears of the people. Vayomer, and they said the famous words, it's in this week's parasha, not last week's parasha. They said, Kol Asher Diber Hashem, everything that Hashem says, Na'aseh V'Nishma. We will do, and then we will understand. Right? So, this phrase, Na'aseh V'Nishma, is the exact opposite of Mishpatim. Right? It's saying we don't need to understand. We will understand, but we won't need to understand. Right? Mishpatim are mitzvahs which we taka dafka do understand. Right? Na'aseh V'Nishma is like a surrender beyond understanding. It's saying whatever Hashem does, we don't have to understand. We'll do it blindly. Right? In other words, we have a parasha that's called Mishpatim. Most of the mitzvahs are Mishpatim. We end with the mitzvah which is not one of the Mishpatim. And then we end with a theme at the end of the story which of Matan Torah, which actually belongs last week. Yeah? Which Dafka emphasizes the need not to have Mishpatim. Which is very strange. Now, it is true that the reason we have Mishpatim here, and let's have a look at the Rashi. It's a number two. Right? Famous Rashi at the beginning of the Parsha. Where Rashi says, Ve'ele ha-Mishpatim. And these are the Mishpatim. So Rashi says the following. Let's have a look at it. It's number two. Kol mokim shenemar eile. Whenever you have in the parsha where it says the word eile, these are pasal eser rishonim. It negates what comes before and it starts a new chapter. However, whenever you have the eile, right? When you have the eile and these are moisif al rishonim, it's an extension of what came before. So, what does that mean? That the Torah is telling us mahar rishonim misinai af eilu misinai. That just like what happened last week was from Sinai, we need to know that all the mitzvahs, even the mishpatim, come from Sinai. Okay. So that's a logical thing. However, it doesn't explain the whole parasha. See, what happens like this, right? We have Matan Torah. We have parasha then called Mishpatim. True, it's coming to tell us that even the mishpatim are from Sinai. That's what Rashi says on a simple level. However, the Torah seems to emphasize the concept of mishpatim on a deeper level here. Because what happens is like this. We have this parasha of Mishpatim, which includes things which aren't Mishpatim. Which, if we go by the definition, the name represents the whole parasha. We have to say that even what comes at the end of the parasha, which is Mida Milk, and the story of Matan Torah, is somehow connected with Mishpatim, which seems to represent that this is the perfection of Matan Torah. It almost tells us that you have Matan Torah, and then you have Mishpatim, and Mishpatim is the ultimate of Matan Torah. Right? Not only it's the ultimate Matan Torah, but even the things which we're going to learn that seems to be not connected to Mishpatim, all have to somehow be perfected by the concept of Mishpatim, which is why this parasha's name is Mishpatim. Which all seems very strange, because why would the perfection of Matan Torah be Mishpatim anyway? Mishpatim are things we can work out without the Torah, almost. It's logical, right? Okay, they're godly, and of course they have axioms which are Torah, but they relate to the human brain, right? Matan Torah is much higher than that. So why is everything sort of climax in Mishpatim? And not only that, but it seems to even be take over the concept of Chukim and the story of Matan Torah. Right, clear? So let me share with you an idea that goes like this. This is okay. So he bases it on a very fascinating concept. If you have a look at number 5. There's a pasuk we say every day in davening that is explained by the great Kabbalist, the Shalom HaKadosh. It's a pasuk that comes from the Shira, what the Yidden sang when they came out of Mitzrayim after the sea was split. We're going to focus on the second part of the pasuk, but I don't like copying half pasukim, so let's just learn the whole pasuk. So it says, they said, Ozi v'zimroska v'yili lishua. Hashem is my strength and my might. He's become my deliverance, my salvation, in other words. And then they said the following. Ze keili ve'anvehu. Right? This is my God, and I will glorify him. Right? That's what it says. Elokei Avi, he's the God of my father, v'aroi memenu, and I will exalt him. Okay. Says the Shalom like this. There's a difference here between my God and the God of my father. What does that mean? My God, says the Shalom, refers to when a person understands Hashem, understands the Torah. Right? I'll just read you his language. He says, Shazer Keili mitzad hasagosi v'idiyosi. He's my God because I've learnt about him, I've studied him, I internalize him, I've understood as much as I can about Hashem as I possibly can. Right? So what happens when it's Zer Keili, says the Shalom? We have to understand the pasuk clearly. Then it's v'anvehu. Says the Shalom, v'anvehu means ani v'hu. I'm really connected to him. Then I'm really connected to him. If you understand Hashem, then it's your God. Not just a remote concept, it's yours. Right? Elokei Avi, however, if it's my father's God, what does it mean my father's God? It's my God too. What does it mean my father's God? I mean, it's a God that I accept. I accept because my father told me, my grandfather told me, all the way back to Har Sinai. Emuna, it was given to me, handed down from person to person, parent to parent. It's my father's God, that's why I believe in him. In other words, it's really Emuna, which is a beautiful thing. But then, you're not really connected. It's not your God, it's missing something. So, Vareva Menu, you will exalt him, you'll glorify him, you'll put him on a pedestal, but it's not you. It's not your identity. Yeah? So there's a little bit connected to what we said last week, that there's a concept of Da esolekeh avicha. You have to learn because you have to understand as much. Yes, we have to have a munda, but you have to understand as much as we can about Hashem because then it's our God. Now, how does this work? So it works like this. That although we say, the truth is like this. In a very big way, this is exactly the sequence of Matan Torah and Mishpatim. Right? Matan Torah is Emuna, right? Emuna. Hashem reveals himself at Har Sinai. He almost imposes himself upon us, right? He reveals himself. We are swept off our feet, so to speak. There's clarity. There's nothing to talk about. There's nothing yes to understand, not understand. The whole reality of the world became almost superimposed by Hashem at Matan Torah, right? The whole world stopped. The whole world saw this. The world almost ceased to exist in its form which we know it. And was overcome by the reality of Hashem. So Yisroi, Parshas Yisroi, is very much Elokei Avi, the God of my father. Given to me. God given to me. No choice, no understanding, but clear, given to me. Then Hashem says, it's not enough. You have to have Zer Keili. It's got to be your God. Where do we discover God ourselves? In which part of the Torah mainly? Mishpatim. Right? Mishpatim is a part of the Torah that we can understand. If it's so good just to follow Hashem blindly, why isn't the whole Torah Chukim? No, because you have to be Zer Keili. The whole Torah is Chukim, it's wonderful, it's amazing obedience, it's surrender, it's fantastic. But it's not yours, it's not you, you don't understand it. So therefore, after Yisroi, Hashem says, you know what's even more important? Mishpatim. Because Mishpatim are the mitzvahs you could understand. Right? I will develop this a bit deep in a moment, but... No, it says Nase, which actually fits very well with this. Because even Nase v'nishma, it says Nase will do, but then v'nishma will understand it then. No, in Yisrael just says, everyone always thinks it does, because that's a story about the Torah, but it's not, it's in Parashat Mishpatim. But we'll see how that fits the Mishpatim in a minute. Right? So Mishpatim is when it's there, Keli, it's my God. Now, the order always is, which is going to raise a big question in a moment, the order always is, you have to have a munna and then understanding. Not the other way around. The other way around is very dangerous. Why? Which is why we have Yisrael before Mishpatim. Because a person is biased. A person doesn't have objective thinking. And when you want to understand Hashem, and that's your whole foundation, your foundation is what you understand, then it just becomes rational Judaism, which is very, very dangerous. And you land up not serving Hashem the way, you land up serving yourself more than Hashem. It's you, not Hashem. The idea is for you to understand Hashem. So therefore, the first thing is when we bring up children, also the same thing. What is the first thing we do to a baby boy? A bris. When do we do it? When he can't understand anything, when he's 8 days old. Why? Because we instill emunah. Right? And this is what we told. We told that when a child can talk, first thing is you drum the child with emunah. Faith. Yes, we indoctrinate children with faith. Correct. That's what we do, right? We don't let them grow up and understand, discover it themselves. No. Because the foundation has to be complete surrender to Hashem. Once you have, but then we say emunah comes first, that's true. And then, but however, that's not enough. The ultimate is that you should try and understand yourself. So after emunah, after Yisrael comes Mishpatim, right? Because if you start with Mishpatim, a person has self-bribery, as the Rebbe calls it here, right? So therefore, it's got to be, we say you've got to understand, but what do you have to understand? You have to understand the truth of Torah, not your own truth, right? So therefore, you have to surrender to the axiomatic belief in Torah and the holiness of Torah and the godliness of Torah, and then try and understand that, which we understand mostly through Mishpatim, but it's got to be founded, it's got to be based on total emunah. Good. The problem is, how does that fit into the whole word of the Shalom? Let's go back and look at the Pasuk. According to this theory, the Pasuk should have been the other way around, correct? We say over here, Zeh Keili V'Anveyu. This is my God, Anivahu. That's understanding, right? Because it's my God, because I understand it. Okay, Aviv, just my father's God, Emunah, Rav Menu, then I'll put him on a pedestal. And we say both are necessary. But we just said both are necessary in the opposite order. Emunah comes before Seichel, correct? So it should be, Elokei Aviv, Rav Menu. It should be first my father. First the God of my father, Emunah, I accept it, it's given to me. That comes first. Then it should be, but I'm going to go even deeper. I'm going to say, Zekeli Vanveyu. This is my God because I'm going to make it mine because I'm going to learn it and understand it and delve into it and it should become part of who I am. And the apostle says that way around. Yeah? See, here the Rebbe says in a very, very deep thing and I hope I'm going to get it across clearly. It says the following. Let's understand why it's so important. Why it's so important to understand. Why is it so important? Right? If Hashem wants us to serve Him, so we should serve Him. What's the difference if we understand or not? What's the difference if it's ours or not? Right? But we know like this. We know, we've talked about this many times, that the purpose of the world, the purpose of Matan Torah actually, right, was to bring God into this world. We know before Matan Torah, we've talked about this many times, before Matan Torah, God and the world were somewhat separate. The spiritual and physical were separate. Heaven and earth were separate. But Matan Torah was there to fulfill the original plan of creation, to make what's called Dira B'Tachtonim, a dwelling place for Hashem in this world. A dwelling place for Hashem in this world means, to use the words of the Medrash, that Elyonim Yeidu L'Tachtonim, that what is above will come below, and what is below will come upwards, which is what happened at Matan Torah. Hashem initiated the process. Hashem came down to Matan Torah, and then Moshe Rabbeinu, representing Klal Yisrael, went up to Har Sinai. So it was a kind of meeting. Why is this meeting so important? So like this. What does it mean that Hashem wants to live in this world? What does it mean? What does it mean that Hashem wants to live within us? What does it mean when we talk about this concept that when Yidden built a Mishkan, it wasn't just building the Mishkan, they were building a Mishkan within themselves. What does it mean that we have to make our homes into a dwelling place for Hashem? What does all that mean? What it means is as follows. What it means is that Hashem doesn't want to come into this world imposing Himself on the world, right? In other words, Hashem, when Matan Torah happened, the world as we know it ceased to exist. Right? It was instant transformation. Why? Because it was like, I think that's the word, it was like a superimposing of Hashem on the world. So the world didn't function as a world. The world just functioned because Hashem was there. So the reality was God. But the world's functionings kind of diluted, disappeared. Right? When Hashem says He wants to live in the world, He says the world should remain a world. Right? The world should remain a world. But the world should change. Still be a world, but change. Elevate itself. Become more holy. The functioning of the world, the functioning of nature, the functioning of the way Hashem created the world to function as a world function, as a physical world function, should remain. And yet it should become more refined, holier, a place which could facilitate God's presence. Which is why Hashem says there's a two-way street here. I'm coming down to our Sinai. I'm going to initially superimpose myself on the world. But that's not what I want. I want then kind of almost to step back, and I want you then to elevate yourself. You need to change. Clear? Now. Which is why there has to be this concept of aliyah, elevation. Not just Hashem coming into the world. It's got to be the world changing a bit, the world elevating and still remaining a world. Now in an amazing way, this is the same thing. It's the same distinction between emunah and seichel. Right? Which is why mishpatim is so important. Emunah means, and it's a critical foundation, it's a critical start, right? Which is why Hashem came down to Har Sinai first. Emunah means, I don't care what you think, this is what you got to believe. And you say, no problem, sir. Done. Do it. So that's a foundation, because that's what we need to do initially, is to surrender, because we need to know who the focus of this whole exercise is, and it's Hashem. So therefore, of course, emunah is the first step, right? That's why emunah is so important. But that hasn't really fulfilled the purpose of creation. The purpose is that you need to change. You are not the emunah. Emunah is being instilled in you. You follow? You're not the emunah. You're just surrendering to something. It's like, okay, obvious, God of my Father. Now I want you to become a yid. I want you to believe in Hashem. I want you to understand. That's why we need mishpatim. Okay? So that's similar to what we said before, just explaining it better on why that process is so important. That's the case, we have to go a step deeper then. So the way it works is like this. We have Parshas Yisro. Yisro is Matan Torah. Emunah. Hashem imposing Himself. Surrender. World ceasing to exist with its normal functionality. Emunah foundation is there. The Hashem says, okay, now it's Mishpatim. Mishpatim means understand what you can understand. Your brain, as it functions as a brain, must be a place which can understand Hashem. Your feelings must be feelings that can understand, that can absorb Hashem, and your action, your behavior, everything about you as you are, without ceasing to exist as you are, needs to be a vehicle for Hashem, which is why Mishpatim is so important. But then you have to go a step deeper. And this is the hard part to understand. That you, with your perspective, have to understand Hashem so much that you're then even able to understand emunah. Now, that's almost an oxymoron. Right? So what does it mean to understand emunah? It means like this. You have to, because you see, mishpatim has a downside, right? We said mishpatim is so important because it's you facilitating Hashem. The problem is you're only facilitating Hashem as much as you can understand. You're not facilitating that about Hashem, which is transcend understanding. Right? So we've got a problem here. Emunah is Hashem, the infinite God, the transcendent God, how he's higher than intellect. He takes you over. The problem is, it's not me. Mishpatim is great because now I'm fulfilling Hashem's purpose. It becomes me because I understand that. The problem is, what do I understand? I only understand that about Hashem that relates to the human brain. Right? The ultimate is that after you go through a process of mishpatim and you learn and you understand, you begin to appreciate through human understanding, not by being superimposed. You begin to understand through human understanding that there's so much more you don't understand. But not because it was indoctrinated to you, because you understand it. Your brain facilitates the necessity of emunah. You see what I'm saying? That's like a deep thing.
And then also, I think that learning in general, like it is a cycle, because you have emunah, so then you go and learn. But when you learn, then
you understand. There's more to believe in. Correct.
Takes you to the next level of then. Okay, now I understand why I have the emunah.
Right.
So,
but it's a little bit deeper. In other words, it's saying that you refine your brain to such an extent that you understand the limitation of the human brain, and you understand, you appreciate the absolute the critical necessity for a munna in something you completely don't understand. Right? That's the ultimate. That's the real bringing Hashem into this world. That's why the Shalos Vert is not Pasuk. So yes, there's a lakay Ovi, there's a munna which comes before understanding. Correct. But the Pasuk is saying, no. Even when you had a munna first, then it's Zekeli Ve'anveyu. It's my God, because now I need to understand it. But when I understand him properly, I come back through my understanding, through the human brain, to connect to Elokei Ovi, the God of my father. Back to Amunah. But this time, I'm the Amunah. It's not being imposed on me. I'm not disappearing to facilitate Amunah. I am facilitating the Amunah. My brain, my intellect is facilitating the faith in God. Very deep idea. And with that, we understand the whole parasha. So we have the parasha's Yisrei. Emunah, imposed Emunah, critical foundation. Can't start without that. In our own life, you can't start without that. Children can't start without that. You've got to start with Emunah. It doesn't work any other way. Foundation. Then says Hashem, but don't forget the purpose is that you need to facilitate Hashem. It can't be Hashem imposed on you. You need to facilitate Hashem. How do we start that? Mishpatim. Ve'eila Mishpatim. That's a continuation of our Sinai. Most of the parasha deals with mitzvahs you can understand because you've got to start using your intellect. You've got to start using your brain. You have to understand everything about Hashem that you could understand. Refine your brain. Change your brain. Change who you are. So you become a facilitator for Hashem. You become a person that's bringing Hashem into your being, every part of your being. But you've got to do it to such a degree where your brain then understands and facilitates and appreciates that which is beyond the seichel. What's the last mitzvah in the parasha? Meat and milk, chukim. What's the last story in the parasha? Back to Matan Torah, back to surrender, back to Amunah, but this time after the Mishpatim. And that's the ultimate connection to Hashem. So the way it works is, the equation is very simple. Impose the Amunah, understanding, and then the understanding brings Amunah. And that's why the order of the parasha is the way it is. Okay. Okay. Have a good day, everyone.
Do you think Hashem is disappointed in the world?
No, I think he's...
At the way it's going at the moment.
He doesn't look at the whole world. He looks at me and you to see if you're doing good things.
Good job. What was the sikha?
It's Chelek Tes Zayin. The first one of Mishpatim. It's absolutely phenomenal.
Thank you.
Have a good day, everyone.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Very thoughtful.
Thank you.
You're welcome.